Live from the College of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at Michigan State University, it is now time to go beyond the X's and the O's with WKAR's Current Sports.
You want to go after an athlete, one of my athletes, come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
My style is impetuous. My defense is impregnable.
Well, I'm the best corner in the game. When you try me with a star receiver like Crabtree, that's the result you're going to get.
Yes, did I express to them I was mad? I was furious. Just furious.
I know my wife will at least shut fake one time.
We talking about practice, not a game.
And I told our players, you need to be more like a dog. We don't need a bunch of cats in here. Looking in the mirror. Do I look good? I got my extra bands on. I got my other shoes on. Be a dog. We don't need no meows. We don't need no cat.
Here's your host, L. Martin.
What is up, beautiful people? That's right. It is about that time. Current Sports is now live here on this hump day edition of WKAR's Current Sports. It is September 26th, 2018. We are inching closer and closer to the month of October. Can you believe that? That's my birthday month. Please send all gifts to my Cash App. Thank you in advance. We've got a great show in store for you guys on this beautiful fall day here in mid-Michigan. I mean, it is gorgeous outside. You know, fall is my second favorite season. You know, 60 degrees, hoodie weather. I love fall fashion. And when it's like this, I mean, it's picturesque. Beautiful day. The sun is out. Birds are chirping. Sky is blue. And we've got a great show coming your way. On today's Current Sports, as promised, we will lead the show talking about your Detroit Lions. As, of course, the Lions topped Tom Brady and the New England Patriots on Sunday Night Football, national television. And they didn't just beat Tom Brady and the Patriots, the dynasty that they are. But when you look at the numbers, when you look at that game, the Lions dominated. It was not even close. You saw a frustrated Tom Brady and Bill Belichick in that game. So that has led many Lions fans to hop back on the bandwagon and say, oh, my bad. I was just joking about my overreaction to that 0-2 start. So I've got some thoughts on that reaction from Lions fans. And also, I want to address a conversation that we did have after week one and that Monday Night Football loss to the New York Jets, on Monday Night Football, national television as well. The Lions got embarrassed. Not the start that you want if you're Matt Patricia taking over the Detroit Lions franchise as head coach. And, you know, after that game, you started to hear these reports come out about preseason training camp and about Matt Patricia possibly losing the Lions locker room and Matt Patricia overworking some of the players and that leading to some of the players complaining about this new system. And, you know, I did address a video yesterday on Current Sports, a video that came out of Matt Patricia celebrating with his team after that win over his former boss and Bill Belichick and the Patriots. And I want to put some things in perspective when it comes to that as well. And also, we will talk about the roughing the passer rule. It's a rule that has brought about many takes. Defenders in the league are very frustrated and don't know how on some of these plays, because some of these plays are just bang, bang, where the quarterback just releases the football. The defender is right in the face of the quarterback and flags are being thrown left and right for roughing the passer. It has caused a lot of controversy. It's a hot topic right now in the National Football League, and we will address that on today's Current Sports as well. And we have not one but two guests throughout this hour. Segment B, we will welcome the great Tom Shanahan, author of Ray of Light, profiling the great Jimmy Ray, African-American quarterback here at Michigan State University that led the Spartans to a national championship. Tom will join me in studio. And then on the back end of the show, we will have my dear friend Adam Biggers, formerly of FanRag Sports, now the co-publisher of the Great Lakes Divide. He has been covering all things U of M football this season, I'm excited to get Adam's take on just how good the Michigan Wolverines are on the gridiron this season. All right, so all of that while, of course, inviting you all beautiful people to be a part of the hour. 517-355-WKAR, 517-355-9527 is the number to call. You can also, of course, go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/WKAR News. There we have the live stream up and running. You can comment below that video, and you can join the conversation on Twitter. Tweet the show at WKAR_sports, or tweet me directly at Al Martin WKAR. And I want to remind you all that, hey, today is the final day of our WKAR Radio Fall Fundraiser. All right, if you enjoy the programming that you listen to on a daily basis here at WKAR, please become a sustainer. Become an official WKAR member, because, as I like to say, we can't do what we do without you. All right? And again, if you donate right now, again, it's our final day, final chance to do this. Today only, if you donate right now, you can get the Public Radio Nerd Mug for a donation of $10 monthly. And if you want to up that a bit and become a $15 a month donor, you can do that, again, by multiple ways in which you can do it. But if you do that, $15 or more a month, you will get the Public Radio Nerd T-shirt. And the ultimate sustainer pack is pretty cool, because if you donate $25 a month or more, you will get the Public Radio Nerd mug, T-shirt, and you get some pretty fly WKAR NPR socks. That's great stuff, isn't it? All right, so multiple ways in which you can donate. You can pick up that phone and dial 855-724-9344, 855-724-9344. You can also give now at WKAR.org and just follow the links, the Give Now links, to make that donation as well. So, all right, let's keep this train moving. Here are now your current sports quick hit headliners. Right, and we start with some MSU football news. Michigan State safety Kari Willis and Michigan linebacker Noah Furbush were named semifinalists for the William V. Campbell Trophy, as announced today. The two are among 180 semifinalists for the award, which is presented annually to college football's top scholar athletes. So congratulations to Michigan State safety Kari Willis and Michigan linebacker Noah Furbush, showing that they're not just doing work on the field, but off of it in the classroom as well. All right. Number five, Michigan State men's soccer travels to Penn State for its Big Ten road opener. That matchup will take place tonight at 6 p.m. The game can be streamed on BTN+. MSU sits at 7-0-2 overall, undefeated right now, 1-0-0 in the Big Ten contest, good for 3 points. Penn State is tied for first in the league with 4 points, with a 1-0-1 record. Overall, Penn State is 2-4-1 this season. Michigan State tied for third with 3 points. The Spartans are one of four teams with 3 points, along with Indiana, Wisconsin, and Maryland. All right, yesterday afternoon, John Beilein, head coach of the University of Michigan men's basketball team, he spoke publicly for the first time since his surgery, which took place in early August. The 65-year-old coach, the winningest in Michigan men's basketball program history.
Beat the bully.
Thank you. Thank you for that, Jay. Made clear that he was not back, though, to 100%. This is what Beilein had to say yesterday. Quote, when you have double bypass surgery, they basically open your chest right up. There's a lot of soreness still, but they say this is all part of it. So wishing John Beilein a speedy recovery as he continues to do so. It was a pretty cool shot of him yesterday at practice, a picture floating around here locally of him looking at Brandon Johns, the East Lansing high school product, who, of course, took his talents to Ann Arbor and is now a player under head coach Beilein. And I'm told that Beilein, he cannot yell during practice, and he does experience chest pains when he, you know, and breathing problems due to that surgery. So, yeah. Shout out to Ray from Indiana for that. All right. The Detroit Tigers have matched their win total from last season with a 4-2 win over the Minnesota Twins last night. They won their 64th game of the season with five to play. And when you look at the keys to the win, right-hander Spencer Turnbull, he shook off his struggles from his first start, throwing six solid innings, and his major league debut. Harold Castro started an eighth-inning rally with a single to right field, and Shane Green picked up his 32nd save in the inning. So the Detroit Tigers, again, topping the Minnesota Twins, tying their win total from last season, 64 wins for the Tigers. And we brought this story to you in our headliners, a very disturbing and idiotic story. A food service employee at Comerica Park who was fired after a video appeared to show him spitting on a pizza. He was reportedly charged yesterday and must undergo infectious disease testing. The charges leveled against Jalen Curley, 20 years old, were felony and misdemeanor food law violations, according to the Associated Press. Now, as part of his requested disease evaluation, he must also undergo a hepatitis panel. So there you have that. Again, there are just some sick people in this world. To spit as a employee of a food company, to spit in somebody else's food, that's about as low as it gets right there. I just don't understand that. So, yeah, Jalen Curley, his name deserves to be out there and dragged through the mud right now. That is just sickening stuff. All right, back to sports. In a wild exhibition game in Chicago, the Detroit Red Wings defeated the Chicago Blackhawks 8-6 last night. The final, man, that's, Jack, that's a lot of scoring. Now, if I tell you what, not a hockey fan, not a big hockey fan, but if every game was like an 8-6 game, they may get me. I may watch a game or two during the regular season.
You know, the crazy part about that, it was two NHL goalies. So it was a preseason game, but both goalies were NHL regulars. Jimmy Howard was in net for the Wings and Cam Ward for the Blackhawks. So 8-6 goals. Yeah, no.
It's not a good sign if you are a Detroit Red Wings fan. Yeah, and Andreas Athanasiou and Thomas Vinek each had two goals. Athanasiou added two goals. Well, excuse me, added two assists. And Luke Witkowski, Darren Helm, Anthony Mantha, and Dylan Larkin shorthanded added goals. Jimmy Howard, as you just mentioned, Jack, stopped 30 of 36 shots, but still, 8-6. The Wings are now, though, 5-0-0 during exhibition play and will play tonight in Boston. Jack, when it comes to the Wings being 5-0-0, is it kind of like the NFL preseason? Like, it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's preseason hockey. Is that kind of the same thinking that goes into that when it comes to preseason hockey?
Yeah, definitely, because okay. I would say the score doesn't matter so much as the development and how, like, the young players do, you know, kind of similar to the NFL. And, you know, to that end, I've actually been pretty impressed with the Red Wings, but I don't draw very much from them being 5-0, no.
Okay, gotcha. All right, but some encouraging things when it comes to some of the young pups in the winged wheel jersey. All right, Detroit Pistons center Andre Drummond. Buckle up for this one, Pistons fans. Andre Drummond said he's been given the green light by new coach Dwayne Casey to shoot three-pointers this season. Now, I profiled this during the summertime here on Current Sports because Andre, he started posting all these videos on his Instagram page of him lighting it up from deep. And I think Andre is getting the message because no longer can you just be a big man in the National Basketball Association who just plants in the paint and does work. stretch forwards and stretch big men, period, those are the players that get paid the big bucks. Andre realizes that now. So Drummond, who's made just 5 3-point field goals in 6 seasons with the Pistons, said he has worked on his perimeter shooting throughout the offseason and his career. We'll see what happens there. This is a surprising story. Clarissa Shields, Flint's favorite daughter. Shields, the famed female boxer, used to be a big Serena Williams fan, but not anymore. Shields felt shunned when she crossed paths with Serena at the 2016 Olympics in Brazil, where Shields became the first American male or female to win 2 gold medals in boxing. She claimed that Williams ignored her when she said hello to the tennis star before the Olympics began, and that later she saw Williams give the same treatment to famed basketball coach Mike Krzyzewski, Coach K. Shields said Williams eventually said hey to her, but was too late to make up for the original snub. So Williams' name came up yesterday when Shields was asked during a conference call who her sports role models were while growing up in Flint. And she went on to say that, yeah, it used to be Serena Williams. So, again, the reason why Shields was made available to the media is because Shields, a 2-division world champion, she will fight for the unified middleweight championship November 17th in Atlantic City. So there you have that. And today she calls boxers Andre Ward and Floyd Mayweather her sports role models. And also shout out to Andre Ward, who was in the original Creed movie. I just saw that Creed 2 with Sylvester Stallone and Michael B. Jordan, the trailer dropped this morning. I am incredibly excited for that film. Are you a Rocky fan at all, Jack? I'm curious.
Yeah, big time. And I liked Creed a lot as well.
Creed was awesome. You know, in my personal sports movie list, Creed, just because I can relate to it so much, especially when, you know, because Rocky, spoiler alert, turn down your radio if you haven't seen Creed. Rocky has cancer in that first movie, Creed 1. And Michael B. Jordan, you know, is taking care of Rocky as he battles cancer. And I can relate so much because some of those scenes got me, because I remember doing that, some of those same things for my grandfather when he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. So I can relate to it so much. I always get emotional when I see that movie. But yeah, I'm excited for Creed too. I'm just the cliche storyline of Apollo Creed's son taking on Ivan Drago's son. Ivan Drago in Rocky IV, I believe, beat, well, not, well, he killed Apollo Creed in that movie. And just to have both sons going at it now, that's kind of cliche, isn't it? Like,
yeah, for sure. You know what I loved about Creed, the one thing, was his whole way working up before the last fight, he never wanted to go by Creed. Because if you remember, he was Donnie Johnson, Adonis Johnson.
Exactly.
And his whole thing was he wanted to get there by his own merit.
I love that.
I always loved that. Yeah.
I love that as well. That's great. It was so original on so many levels. So we'll see if Creed 2 lives up to the hype. I believe that's going to be released on Thanksgiving. All right, Hannah Storm and Andrea Kramer will become the first female announcing team to cover an NFL game this Thursday with Amazon Prime Video offering the pair as an online alternative to the Fox broadcast crew of Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. How about that? Kramer said in a news release, teaming up with Hannah and Amazon for this is truly special. Hannah is a brilliant journalist, and she has been a friend for many years. With decades of experience as storytellers, we will be bringing a different voice and viewpoint to covering the game of football. I'm a big fan of both Storm, who is on ESPN, and Andrea Kramer. Watch her fantastic journalism on HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. And those two teaming up, yeah, I may take a break from Joe Buck and Troy Aikman. Not a huge fan of them both. They do a solid job, but I'm not a big fan. Are you a Joe Buck guy, Jack, at all?
Yeah, I actually am.
You are? Yeah. That is so rare today. Joe Buck gets it on social media. Like, oh my goodness.
He does. You know what? I feel like it's kind of a vocal minority, though, because like he does all these primetime games. So you got to think there are more people like me, right, that like Joe Buck. You have to.
You would think, right?
Right.
I mean, there's a reason why Fox has had him on the broadcast for this long, right? So, yeah, I don't know. Joe, sometimes he's gotten better at this. I'll say this, because he sometimes talks over the big moments instead of just letting it breathe. And that's the problem that I've had with Joe in the past. But He's gotten better with that, I must say.
You know what? For me, it's just when a huge play will happen, he won't always be enthusiastic enough. But I think he has an outstanding voice.
Kind of like Gus Johnson.
The exact opposite.
Yeah, the exact opposite. But, you know, Gus Johnson was not enthusiastic at all doing that Michigan State and Washington State game in the Holiday Bowl. I mean, no. He was just like, touchdown, MSU. I'm like, Gus, are you having a bad day? What's going on, man? All right, and last but not least, Kelly Bryant started the past 18 games for Clemson. He will start his next game for another school. On Sunday, Coach Dabo Swinney informed Bryant that he was no longer starting the QB. Yesterday, Bryant informed Swinney that he was transferring. Under the new NCAA redshirt guidelines, by leaving Clemson now, Bryant can salvage his final year of eligibility. He has not decided where he will spend it. That wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners. Let's keep it pushing.
Gotta roll now. You got me? Yes, enjoy it tonight, man. But I'm just telling you, if you're done with it tomorrow, it's on to the Cowboys. Yes,
let's go.
Man, it's all about you guys. Every single day, what you do. I love standing in front of you every single day, man, and I appreciate it. And I count my blessings to be in this locker room right now, man. All right? Keep working. Keep digging, man. We got a long way to go, and we're going to keep pushing our team on three. 1, 2, 3. Three.
All right. Welcome to WKAR's Current Sports. If you're just now tuning in on this Wednesday, September 26, 2018. Again, we've got two guests that will be joining us throughout this hour in just a moment. We will have the great Tom Shanahan, author of Ray of Light. He'll be live in studio to talk about his book that profiles the great Jimmy Ray, the first African-American quarterback at Michigan State University, who led the Spartans to the national championship. Excited to talk with Tom. It's always a great time diving into his work and this book. Curious to see how the pub and the sales have been going with Ray of Light. You don't want to miss that. And also on the back end of the show, we will have Adam Biggers on the show, co-publisher of the Great Lakes Divide. Adam has been covering throughout the year and will continue to do so, of course. Cover Jim Harbaugh's Michigan Wolverines. And I just want to get Adam's take on just how good this Wolverines team truly is. But what you just heard was a video that I acknowledged on yesterday's Current Sports of Matt Patricia after the win over the New England Patriots on Sunday Night Football. Matt Patricia getting some, I shouldn't say revenge, because, I mean, he had a great time in New England, won some rings there, learned under
one of the great football minds of all time, and Bill Belichick. But first game against your old team, you want to win that. You want to win that. It's an emotional one for sure. It's not just another game. And Matt Patricia going against his former boss was able to pick up a dub. And not just any win. This was a dominant win by the Detroit Lions. I mean, when you look at the game plan, and I must say this too. I mean, the great football mind that Bill Belichick is, he got outcoached that game. Bill Belichick got outcoached by the young grasshopper. And when you go back and look at that game, if you look at just the game plans, you know, I think that Bill Belichick, he looked at that Detroit Lions offense and said, all right, they don't have any run game. They've got some talented wide receivers, Marvin Jones Jr., Kenny Galladay, a budding star. Golden Tate can do some damage as well. I'm just going to go into a two-safety deep set all game and challenge you to run on me. And that's what happened. I went back, actually, this morning, you know, before I left the house and on my DVR, watched the second and a bit of the third quarter. Watched the first earlier in the week on Tuesday. I'm kind of a film nut like that sometimes, just to confirm what my eyes saw. And, yeah, that's exactly what the Patriots did. Just a two-safety deep set, and the Lions said, Matt Patricia said, all right, yeah, that's what you're expecting, Bill. I'm just going to line up two tight ends to the left or right and just run the football. And Kerryon Johnson did work. He broke that long streak of not having a 100-yard rusher, finally broke that against the New England Patriots. And the Patriots did not make any adjustments. You know, Bill Belichick was real stubborn in that game. They came out in the same set in the third. And Kerryon Johnson just said, okay, I'm going to run all over you. That's being outcoached. That's what that is. And then offensively, when you look at what you know, the New England Patriots have offensively, they don't have much. And when I heard that Josh Gordon wasn't going to play in that game, maybe the Patriots looked at it like this. All right, Josh Gordon, he's a talented wide receiver. We just got him from Cleveland. He doesn't know the playbook like that. But Josh Gordon is still unbelievably talented. I think Bill Belichick tremendously underestimated the Detroit Lions, just like 99.9% of the population did, and said, look, we don't need Josh Gordon this week. He just got with the team. We're not in desperate need of him. We're playing the Detroit Lions, who have looked absolutely horrible in the first 2 weeks of the NFL year. Let's put him on the sideline. Rest up. We'll get you next week. We got this win. And that is not what happened. Tom Brady, he was pressured. And really, Tom only has one weapon that he can rely on, and that is Rob Gronkowski. And the Lions basically just double-teamed him, knocked him around a few times, and they took away that option for Tom Brady. And where else do you go? Where else do you go on that New England Patriots offense? Now, this is a win that was much needed. Much needed. And the fact that not many, including myself, not many, thought that the Lions were going to win this game, it does a lot for the morale of the team moving forward. They needed this because there were so many down on this team. There was actually a highlight package or a low light package that aired right before kickoff between the Lions and the Patriots with Chris Collinsworth and Al Michaels on the mic. And right before their mics opened to welcome everybody to Ford Field, there was a package that rolled that included about, you know, four voices of Detroit Lions fans calling in to various sports talk shows down on their team with no hope, which was kind of funny. And then all of a sudden the Lions say, well, look at this. And they surprised everybody. They shocked everybody. And the story, though, this week is not about how great the Lions played in that game. Again, this is the national story. Not about how great the Lions played in that game and what they were able to do to get that win, but You know, it's not what's right about the Lions, it's what's wrong with the New England Patriots. You knew that storyline was coming, right? Is the dynasty coming to an end? And I'm not going to go that far. I think that this is still the New England Patriots. We've seen them have slow starts in the past. We've seen them not come out the gates running full speed. I'm not going to underestimate Bill Belichick because this is still the New England Patriots. And I don't know, how many years straight, Jack, have they made the AFC Championship game? I have to look that. Can we look that up real quick?
Yeah, I gotcha.
I want to look that up because, again, this is a dynasty. And, you know, 1 week where they look absolutely horrible against the Detroit Lions, is that alarming? Yeah, it is. But let's talk when we hit the midway part of the year. I'm not going to overreact here and say that the New England Patriots dynasty has come to an end. I think that's just not being realistic here. All right? Bill Belichick, you know, if you are saying that you are tremendously underrating and underestimating one of the great football minds of all time. Jack, how many times have they been to the AFC Championship game?
So at least the AFC Championship game, it dates all the way back to 2011.
Wow.
Yeah, they've lost three in that time. Three conference championships, I should say, and they've been to four Super Bowls and won two of them.
I mean, come on now. That speaks for itself. They have gone at least to the AFC Championship game, played in the AFC Championship game consecutively dating back to 2011.
Correct. Yes.
Amazing. Amazing. So, you know, a loss against the Detroit Lions on Sunday Night Football where you look dominated, yeah, that looks pretty bad. But there's still a lot of football left to play. And then, you know, again, don't read everything. You know, don't believe everything I should say you read on the internet, because these reports about the Lions, you know, annoyed with the new system that Matt Patricia is bringing to the organization. Matt Patricia is overworking us. We don't like, you know, and we're going to be burnt out by week one if he keeps overworking us like this. I mean, those reports came out, and I fed right into them just like you. Because it was amplified with the fact that you got embarrassed by a rookie quarterback and a really bad franchise. When you look at the last 5-10 years in the New York Jets, you got embarrassed on national TV week one on Monday Night Football, the most embarrassing loss in my years of watching the Detroit Lions organization, and now that report comes out? And then I see that video that you just heard. Matt Patricia coming in the locker room and Lions players flocking to him, saying, great job, coach! You know, Matthew Stafford coming over, giving him the game ball. And then Matt Patricia breaking the huddle to end the night, saying, hey, I love you guys, it's on to Dallas now. It looks like these players enjoy playing for Matt Patricia, just looking at that video. So don't believe everything you read on the internet, all right? Real quick thoughts on that, Jack, because looking at that video, that says to me that the Lions, yeah, there's going to be an adjustment period with any new system. You know, Matt Patricia is coming to this organization that does not have a culture of winning. He's trying to change things. So, of course, he's going to work you a little bit. You can't be afraid of hard work. There's going to be some backlash from a few players there because they're used to, you know, the system that Jim Caldwell had in place. They love playing for Jim Caldwell. Jim Caldwell was a player's coach. But when you leave a system like that and bring in a coach from a winning organization like the New England Patriots, who's trying to show you what a winning culture looks like, at some point I think the players say to themselves, all right, let's buy in and at least try this. So I don't know. What to make of this game? I don't know. The Patriots could go on to, again, go to yet another AFC Championship game, and the Lions maybe just had a good Sunday night against the Pats. I don't know. I need to see more of the Lions. Can you duplicate this now? Can you go on the road in Dallas at AT&T Stadium and give them a run for their money and win that game? We'll see.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And you know what? It kind of goes back to, you know, how awful the first game in particular was and the first two just to start off the season. For me, I think they need to win the next two games. They need to beat Dallas, and then they'll host Green Bay. And Aaron Rodgers is obviously outstanding, but he's basically playing on one leg right now.
He's banged up, yeah.
They don't exactly give him a lot of help in Green Bay. But I think one thing that's really interesting is I think this kind of goes full circle to the conversation we had last week about, was it the right move for the Detroit Lions to fire Jim Caldwell? And you and I both said the answer was yes, regardless of how the Patricia era turns out. And I mean, still, it's way too early to really diagnose what Matt Patricia will be as a head coach for the Detroit Lions. But watching that game, you know, seeing the Detroit Lions beat the New England Patriots, I'm not sure any Jim Caldwell coached Detroit Lions team would have ever beaten that Patriots team. No matter how banged up they are, no matter how, you know, their roster may have eroded the last couple of years, I just never saw that from Jim Caldwell, and it looked refreshing to me.
Yeah, it's kind of a contrast when it comes to two conversations, right? I saw this a lot after the Lions were embarrassed on Monday Night Football against the New York Jets, people saying Jim Caldwell never lost like that. Well, when you look at that New England Patriots win, the Detroit Lions never won like that under Jim Caldwell. All right, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we will talk with author Tom Shanahan about his book, Ray of Light, and the integration of college football under head coach Duffy Doherty. You don't want to miss that. We'll be right back. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. Welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. Let's get to our first guest of this Wednesday edition of Current Sports. Right now, you see him on our live stream at facebook.com/WKAR News. He has now joined me live here in Studio S. He is the author of Ray of Light, Jimmy Ray, Duffy Doherty, The Integration of College Football and the 1965-66 Michigan State Spartans. To talk about this wonderful piece of work and so much more, the great Tom Shanahan now joins me here on the show. Tom, how you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. It's always great to be back on campus. Lived over there in Wonders Hall.
Did you pass it driving in today?
Oh, yeah, I always do. No matter what, I always drive by there, look up at the old room. And
do you remember the room number? I'm curious.
412, was it?
Jack just chimed in my ear and said that he also... You lived in Wonders Hall as well, Jack?
Yeah, my freshman year. Sure
His
did.
Freshman year, he did.
Yeah, and all the players lived there. Bubba Smith and Clinton Jones. Jimmy Ray lived over in Wilson.
Okay.
But, yeah, a lot of people have lived there.
That's amazing. I was in Acres my freshman year and then Holden my sophomore year. But, yeah, it's always cool just try. And, again, I've been – and I went here and then started working immediately in Lansing after I graduated. So I passed that building, those buildings all the time and said, yeah. A lot of memories there.
I did have one thing that made me feel really old. One of the state news writers, John LeBlanc, called me up, and we were talking about the book and all the Hall of Fame week events, and I told him I was sports editor of the state news in 1978. and then I realized later that'd be like me talking to somebody from 1938.
It puts things in perspective, doesn't it?
No kidding.
And John's a great, great guy as well. John used to be a production assistant for us here at Current Sports. That's awesome stuff. Yeah. All right, Tom, I'm curious. I mean, since the last time we had you on to talk about the book Ray of Light and Jimmy Ray, African-American quarterback for Michigan State back in the 60s, he'll be honored this week. He's going into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame. Unreal. And this story is intriguing on so many levels. I'm curious, since the last time we had you on, how much has your story kind of been enlightening to others who have heard it.
Well, that's what's been great about the Hall of Fame, because it's brought into focus what Jimmy did here. Largely people have viewed Michigan State as just Duffy Doherty got lucky with a few All-American players, Bubba Smith and George Webster and Gene Washington. They were all from the segregated South, and they all ended up in the College Football Hall of Fame with Clinton Jones is from Cleveland.
Yeah.
And that's why Duffy has really never gotten his proper credit for leading the college, the integration of college football.
Right.
And that was the thing that I wanted to bring to light with the book. And a lot of it I learned from my research. A lot of it I did not know. And that being that Duffy, it started out this way. Michigan State already had a history for playing black athletes.
Right.
From people watching the two Rose Bowl appearances in the 50s and an occasional national TV game. But those were black athletes from Saginaw and Detroit, Michigan high schools. And so they already had a reputation in the South. This is a school that will give black athletes a chance. And then Duffy went down to Atlanta in the late 50s and did a coaching clinic. And he was disturbed that none of the black high school coaches could attend. So on his own, he started staging clinics in the South. And black high school coaches throughout the South would attend. And they had already knew about Michigan State's reputation. Then they met Duffy, who's no better great guy than Duffy.
Right.
They trusted him. They started saying, Duffy, hey, I got this guy I want to send to you. You know, turns out to be guys like George Webster.
Amazing players. Yeah.
So, Duffy continued the clinics, and then he realized, hey, I might as well be down. He and Hank Bullitt told me this story. Hank was his defensive coordinator. I said, hey, if we're going to be putting clinics down here, we might as well start recruiting. And so kind of beginning this momentum on its own. But that was a story that stayed in the shadows. And
Why is that? Why did that story?
That's an excellent question. You know, I think largely because the media in those days avoided issues of race. It's not like now when somebody breaks a barrier, they say the first sentence. Then the media just kind of ignored it for a couple reasons. One, they didn't want to offend their writers. Their readers.
Their audience, right.
Their audience. And then more than that, their advertisers.
Right.
Their financial base. So they kind of tried to avoid the bringing up those type of issues. And that's changed with time. But that's what the main reason is.
When it comes to this story about, you know, Duffy Doherty and him not being afraid to recruit black athletes to his program, for Duffy, what kind of backlash did he receive when he did make this really game-changing move?
Yeah, for the most part, it was well-received up here at Michigan State.
It was, okay.
Yeah. In fact, Clinton Jones, when he went into the Hall of Fame in 2012, he was asked, everything was great on the team, but what about on campus?
Right.
And Clinton Jones says, I never had any problems. Now, you know, we all know that that's going to be different if you go off campus and try to find places to live and that type of thing.
Of course,
but Clinton
right.
Jones said he never had any problems. The only problem, and he said, I take that back. Once he was Mr. MSU, first time a black athlete or a black student had been voted Mr. MSU, and the tradition was he would dance at the ball back in those days. That's the way they did things with Miss MSU, and she was a white girl and she wouldn't dance with him. And
she wouldn't dance with him. I've heard that story,
and I have that in my book. And that's the only thing Clinton can cite. So for the most part, the Spartans were accepted because they were winning. Michigan State was a national power. It did start to get a little rough for Duffy when Jimmy Ray started coming up the pipeline. It looked like he was on path to be the starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
And so Duffy would start hearing people say, we're getting to be too much like Grambling. Remember, this is the 60s when segregation and Grambling had, you know, obviously was a historically black college and turned out a lot of NFL players because they couldn't go anywhere else.
Right.
And then Duffy Booster came up to Duffy at a party and said, you know, I hope you're not going to play a black quarterback. And or we're no longer friends. And Duffy told him, I'll tell you what, we're no longer friends right now. And he left the party and he stuck to his plan. And Jimmy was All-American Steve Judae's backup in 65, and then he was a starter in 66 and 67.
Duffy, he certainly adhered to his moral code,
right.
Without a doubt. You play the best players at the end of the day. And I think we're still having this conversation today in 2018, though. You know, Tom, when I go to the barbershops, we're still talking about, you know, the dynamic of the black quarterback in today's game of football. And the kind of racial subconscious implications and thoughts that we have when discussing the black quarterback in relation to the white quarterback, still here in 2018.
Yeah, I wrote about that. It's on my website now, ShanahanReport.com, where I kind of waited until Hall of Fame week to write about it because we had this incident down in Texas where the superintendent said you can't trust a black quarterback because I guess Deshaun Watson made a bad play.
Exactly.
You know, first of all, let me say, was he watching the national championship game when Deshaun Watson threw the touchdown pass? And what was it, fourth and one? Or
I believe it was third or fourth and one.
Down, yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, but.
He apologized, but you can't. I mean, once you say something like that, it's too late for that,
right? Yeah, we know what you think.
Right.
Well, but I made the point in my story that Jimmy Ray addressed this issue a half century ago when he led the Michigan State Spartans to the 66th National Championship. And what we have to remember is, so it's kind of sad that some people still think like that, but that's the way we are as humans. You know, they're all over the world. People have racist feelings. So it's kind of sad that that still exists. Mm-hmm. But what we have to remember is look at a guy like Jimmy Ray and look how far we've come. Because before Jimmy Ray, a black quarterback couldn't even get on the field.
Right.
You know, so starting with Jimmy Ray and others, they started knocking down the barriers. We're never going to completely eradicate it because that's just the way humans are. But obviously we've got to remember how far we've come. And it shows us how we still have a ways to go, but we always have to remember how far we've come. And like President Obama often said, and I wrote this, you know, history's not a straight line. It's a jagged line. It takes steps before we lurch forward.
Without a doubt, Tom. And, you know, with Jimmy going into the Michigan State Athletics Hall of Fame this week, and you'll be actually present. We had Maya Washington on the show earlier this week to talk about her documentary Through the Banks of the Red Cedar, where she profiles that time as well, right, and breaking the color barrier in college sports and sports in general here at Michigan State University. And you'll be at the premiere of that film here at Wells Hall later on this evening. And I'm curious, when you talk with Jimmy Ray about this honor and about his story and the part that he played in this historical moment, What does he tell you? I mean, does he understand it? Does he fully grasp it?
Yeah, he's thrilled about it. He was speechless. One of the first persons he calls was Bob Pisa. Bob was put in the Hall of Fame last year.
Love Bob.
Yeah, and as Jimmy said, it was 2 70-year-old men crying on the phone.
Wow, that's beautiful.
Yeah, but what's great about Jimmy getting in is he's being recognized not just for what he did on the field, but how he transcended race in sports and with his coaching career, because he was a mentor to so many coaches in college and the NFL, starting with Tony Dungy and Tyrone Willingham, and I can mention many other coaches. Mm-hmm. But that is being recognized. And I've been on what's great about Michigan State putting Jimmy in the Hall of Fame is, and I've been on the Hall of Fame committees before, and I know they can be real rigid about things like this.
Right.
Jimmy was only second team all Big Ten. So some people would hold that against him. But Michigan State recognized, first of all, the first team All-Big Ten quarterback was Bob Greasy.
Yeah, yeah.
All-American, second in the Heisman Trophy voting to Steve Spurrier, College and Pro Football Hall of Fame. So you can't hold second team All-Big Ten in that situation. And then secondly, they're recognizing the barriers he broke down as a quarterback and then continuing to carry Duffy Doherty's banner into the coaching ranks. That's what's great about it.
Again, the great Jimmy Ray, who contributed to, of course, the 1965 national title team, the first black starting quarterback, as
from
Tom just mentioned, from the South to lead a college football team to a championship. Absolutely amazing. So with just a minute left here, Tom, I want you to just kind of let our listeners know how they can get your book if they have it. And a cool moment earlier this week, I don't know if you saw, I tweeted this to you. Mark D'Antonio, he was asked about Jimmy Ray this morning, on Tuesday morning, during his weekly press conference, and he brought up your book. He said, "Hey, I've read Ray of Light, and you know, understand the things that Jimmy Ray did for our program and for sports in general, and now he understands that time." And it was a really cool moment. And you know, for those who haven't read your book, how can they get their hands on it?
Well, actually, they can come to Maya's film tonight at 6 p.m. Wells Hall. It's auditorium, 500-seat auditorium, room 119B, and the MSU bookstore has some copies that'll be sold. And so, not only can you buy the book, but you can get it signed by Jimmy Ray, and I know Gene Washington will be there. I think Clinton Jones is going to be there, and also Baba Pisa. I'm not sure about those guys or if they're in or if they don't come in until tomorrow, but definitely there'll be chances to get the book signed.
the great Tom Shanahan. Tom, thank you so much for your time. Outstanding.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
All right, let's hit our final break. When we come back, we will chat with Adam Biggers, co-publisher of the Great Lakes Divide. We'll talk some Michigan football with him to close out the show. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to WKAR's Current Sports. All right, welcome back to WKAR's Current Sports. We now end the show with the bang. We have not had him on the show in quite some time. I'm excited to bring him on now. His name is Adam Biggers, co-publisher of the Great Lakes Divide, formerly of Fan Rag Sports. And Adam has been covering all things Michigan football. I've been following his work closely in the preliminary stages of the college football season. Adam Biggers now joins us. Adam, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Al. Thanks for having me on.
Always good chatting with you, man. So I want to just dive right into it due to time now. Adam, how good is this Michigan Wolverines football team?
Well, I think it's a little bit better.
Oh, hold on.
In the season.
Oh, we lost you for a second, Adam. I'm sorry. What did you say there?
I said I think Michigan's a little bit better than I initially thought, actually. You know, entering the season, I thought 10-2 would be Patterson playing well and the offensive line playing well, which we've seen. It's a small sample size, but Shea's been pretty good. The O-line is improving. I thought 9-3 was a reasonable benchmark. So I'm still in that 9-3. I'm still in the 9-3 range a little bit. I want to see a little bit more, but I do believe that we've seen at least a little proof of Michigan being able to reach that ceiling. I mean, the offense has been outstanding on all facets. The special teams have been really good, and we saw a dominant performance against Nebraska. So there's a lot to build on for Michigan.
Adam, since that Notre Dame loss on the road to start the year, where have you seen Shea Patterson make the most improvement? What areas of his game?
This guy's just got a calm confidence, and he is firmly in control of the offense. I think at Notre Dame there were some communication issues. I asked Harbaugh after that game if the O-line and Shea had some issues. He said no, but on Monday, Ben Bredesen actually did confirm that. Ben Bredesen, the starting left guard, he did say that there were some communication issues. So, I mean, with that, you know, it kind of dovetails into Shea. The communication's better since Notre Dame, and then therefore Shea has been able to kind of, you know, do the type of things that we thought that Shea would do when he got to Michigan, and he's proven to be an excellent addition. And like I said, I think he's firmly in control of that offense.
And you know what? This past weekend, I must admit, I was quite surprised at just how dominant the Michigan Wolverines looked over Nebraska. I think it's safe to say that it's gonna take head coach Scott Frost some time to put the wheels back on the track for the Cornhuskers, but 56-10. Was this more of a case of Michigan being that good or Nebraska being that bad?
Well, Al, if you saw there was an 18-point spread, Michigan favored by 18, I said there is no way. There's absolutely no way that Michigan's going to beat Nebraska by 2-plus touchdowns. I thought it would be a lot closer game than that. So was it a case of Nebraska being bad? I mean, they had talent, you know, and you would think that they would go in there hungry, 0-2, two home losses, but 5 points each. And so, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to discredit Michigan because, I mean, Michigan did what a good team would do in that scenario, and that's put up a lot of points, be dominant in all phases of the game. So I think I lean toward it's just Michigan showing that Michigan can be pretty good. I don't think it was so much a byproduct of playing a bad team. I think that, you know, we expect if you're a good team to a really good team that you do that sort of thing in that scenario. So, I'm leaning toward it. Like I said, I think Michigan might be a little bit better than what I initially thought heading into the season.
You know what, Adam, I had a bit of a chuckle on your Instagram page when you posted a screenshot of a tweet that you got from one of your readers. And this reader
tagged you and said, I have no clue how you do your job. So many delusional Michigan fans. Adam, what do you think, you know, this, and now I'm going to, you know, put out his Twitter tag here, at 35 Robert 16. What do you think he means by that?
Well, he's actually a Michigan fan. And now let's face it, I mean, any huge college fan base, you're going to have passionate fans. Some of them might be delusional, which we do see with Michigan fans, but we see it, you know, across the board. It's not just a Michigan thing. There are those fringe fans who are, you know, live and die on every single emotion or every single moment. And I mean, a lot of these, and I think he was referring to a lot of these Michigan fans after their Notre Dame game where, you know, well, Harbaugh's not the guy. Michigan is a bad team. You know, the offensive line is never going to come around. Where is his dominant defense? And I mean, you know what I mean? The world was ending after that, that loss at Notre Dame. So I think that's where he was going with that. I got to chuckle out of it too, Al, because it is funny. And I mean, you talk to, you know, you and I have been around, you talk to, you know, the super Michigan State fan and they get really into it. And one mistake or one loss is, you know, the end of the world. And,
right.
You know, you have Notre Dame fans, Ohio State fans, Alabama. I mean, it spans across the country. So, I mean, college football gets us pumped up, right? And it's exciting. And, you know, it's a great thing to cover. I feel fortunate to be able to do this. And it's, you know, you do, unfortunately, you do have some of the fans who are, I don't know if you could take it too seriously, but you know what I mean? They go a little bit too far, I think.
Oh, they do.
So.
Because some of them, and I get into these debates all the time, like every week it seems, with my fraternity brothers who are, you know, MSU alum, went to school with them. And any little thing that goes wrong with Michigan State, oh, D'Antonio needs to be fired, and Dave Warner doesn't know what he's doing. And I'm like, come on, man. Come on, G.
No, Mark D'Antonio being fired, I mean, I don't know. I can't ever see a scenario with that,
right?
That being the case at Michigan State.
Yeah, so I've gotten to a point I just ignore it. I just hit that group me on mute and just keep it pushing, man. All right, well, as we have just a minute left here, real quick, and I know this is an elaborate answer that you can give me, but we're just a minute left, Adam. Well, with that being said, I mean, Michigan is going to really be judged this season when it comes to what they do against their rivals and against the big dogs and big competition. Does Jim Harbaugh sense that pressure?
I'm sorry, what was the last? Does Jim Harbaugh what?
Does he sense that pressure?
Does he think that pressure?
No, sense. Does he feel that pressure?
Oh, does he sense it? No, I don't think, no. I mean, there's internal pressure, obviously. I mean, Jim Harbaugh is a competitive guy. It's Michigan football. You know, you have all the pride and history in it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't say that he feels pressure in a bad sense. It's self-applied pressure. I mean, they expect to win. And, yeah, absolutely. They got to beat a rival this year, and there's only two more of those games left. It's either Michigan State, and that's on the road, and that's a difficult one with the Spartans winning 8 of the past 11.
Right, right.
You know, Ohio State, they've only beat them 3 times since 2000. So, I mean, they got to pull off one of the other, if not both,